right, let's dive deep into Hosea, specifically chapters 1 through 3. It's a wild ride, you know, this whole story of the prophet Hosea and his wife Gomer.
It really is, yeah.
And their relationship, well, it becomes this powerful metaphor for God's relationship with Israel.
Right.
It's pretty amazing how this ancient text still feels so relevant today, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I mean, the way Hosea's personal life just kind of like mirrors the spiritual struggles of the whole nation of Israel. You know, it's raw and it's messy and it gets right at the heart of God's love and the consequences of, well, turning away from that love.
Exactly. Right from the start. I mean, we run into this real head scratcher.
Yeah.
God tells Hosea to marry a wife of whoredom.
Yeah.
To kind of show, to illustrate Israel's unfaithfulness. But wait a minute, hold on a second. Isn't that a little contradictory? I mean, we know Leviticus is pretty clear on priests and promiscuous women.
Right.
So how does that even work for a prophet?
Yeah.
You know, God's spokesperson.
You've hit on a key point there. I mean, it is this kind of deliberate paradox. It's a shock tactic. To really grab the Israelites' attention, God's message had to cut through their spiritual apathy. And what better way than to have a prophet actually live out this drama of Israel's infidelity?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so we've got this marriage, but was it literal or was it symbolic?
Mm.
Some scholars say it was an allegory. Some say it was a vision.
Right.
Then there's this whole idea that maybe Gomer was a cult prostitute, which you know, highlights Israel's plunge into paganism.
Right.
Or maybe she represents like the spiritual infidelity of all the Israelites.
Mm.
That's a pretty powerful thought, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it elevates the story beyond just like a simple historical event. You know, it speaks to this deeper truth about the human condition, about our tendency to stray from what we know is right, to chase after these empty promises. And that's exactly what Israel was doing. I mean, turning away from their covenant with God to worship idols.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Mm. So using their family, like, to kind of convey God's message, that wasn't totally out of the ordinary, I guess.
No, not at all. I mean, think about Jeremiah. Jeremiah was forbidden to marry. And that symbolized the devastation to come. Like, that would make family life basically impossible. Or Ezekiel,
sure,
whose wife died on the very day Jerusalem fell. I mean, these personal sacrifices, they added this real-world dimension to their prophecies, made them pretty impossible to ignore.
That makes sense. Okay, let's get back to Gomer, though, and her infidelity specifically. I mean, the text never really comes out and says whether she was unfaithful before the marriage or if it happened later, does it?
You're right. It is ambiguous. And that ambiguity just, you know, adds another layer of complexity to the story, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Some scholars believe that she was always intended to represent this unfaithful wife.
Mm.
And they point to, like, Israel's early betrayal with the golden calf back in Exodus, you know.
Right.
Others believe she became unfaithful later, which maybe mirrors that period of initial faithfulness before Israel really descended into idolatry.
Right.
Yeah.
So we kind of have to just like embrace the mystery there.
Mm-hmm.
But it is clear that God is deeply hurt by Israel's actions.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a betrayal of the most sacred covenant.
Absolutely. And that brings us to a really crucial point, I think. You know, God's response to this betrayal, it's not just anger. It's not just punishment.
Right.
Yes, there is exile. There is suffering.
Sure.
But he uses those experiences not to punish per se, but to refine and ultimately restore the relationship.
I mean, think about it. You're in exile. Everything you know is gone.
Yeah.
And then you hear these words from Hosea too. I will allure her, bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her.
Mm.
It's almost seductive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like a heartbroken lover who is just desperate for reconciliation.
Yeah. And the imagery, you know, the thorns, the walls, the longing. It's raw pain of separation. But there is that glimmer of hope. There's that longing for the first husband. You know, this isn't just about punishment. It's about a God who wants to rekindle a love that's grown cold.
We've talked about how Hosea's marriage, it's like this incredibly powerful metaphor for God's covenant with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the kids? I mean, Hosea and Gomer have three children.
Mm-hmm.
And their names, they're not just random picks, are they?
No, not at all. Their names are like pronouncements. They're like these prophetic messages woven into like the fabric of Hosea's family. So like the first child, the son, his name Jezreel. And, you know, Jezreel was more than just place. It was really associated with violence and bloodshed, you know, especially the massacre of King Ahab's family.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, right from the start, the name itself, it's like a warning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a reminder of the price of unfaithfulness.
Right.
Almost like God saying, look, Remember what happened to Jezreel. That's what happens when you turn away from me.
Exactly. And then we have this daughter, Lohama, and it means not pitied or, you know, not loved.
Right.
And this name, it highlights how serious Israel's sin really is. And it kind of shows that God's compassion is withdrawn, at least temporarily. It's this stark reminder that actions have consequences, even spiritual action.
That is heavy stuff. It's like God saying, you've pushed me so far that I can't even show you mercy anymore.
Mm.
And then to top it all off, there's another son, Lo-Ami, which means not my people.
Right.
And didn't that signify the ultimate break?
Yeah.
In the relationship? It's like a divorce. Right.
You're right. It does represent this heartbreaking separation between God and Israel. But it is important to remember that even in the midst of this heartbreak, there's still that glimmer of hope. I mean, these names, they're as stark as they are, but they're not the final word.
Okay. So there's a chance for reconciliation. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. They represent kind of a temporary state, a period of exile and chastisement. But they do point toward a future where God will restore his people,
yeah.
You know, where those names will essentially be reversed. I mean, God is a God of second chances, even for a nation as wayward as Israel.
Mm. That's encouraging. Isn't there a passage in Hosea 2 where God promises to restore Jezreel?
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact wording, but it's like this promise of renewal, a reversal of the curse, right?
Yes. In Hosea 2:22, God says, "It shall be in that day I will answer to the heavens, and they shall answer to the earth, and the earth shall answer to the grain, to the new wine, and to the oil, and they shall answer to Jezreel." I mean, it's this beautiful image of renewal, of life just springing forth from what was once, you know, barren and desolate.
Wow. And right after that, God says, "And I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy, and I will say to them which were not my people, thou art my people, and they shall say, thou art my God."
Right.
I mean, it's like watching that family come back together, even stronger than before. Mm. It's powerful stuff.
It is, yeah. And, you know, this reconciliation, it's not just about Israel coming back to God. No, it's about God actually transforming their hearts, making them new. Remember that imagery in Hosea 2 where God allures Israel into the wilderness? And it's not to punish them further, but it's to speak tenderly to them. It's to woo them back to himself.
Huh. It's like a divine romance.
Yeah.
Full of twists and turns.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a reminder that even when we stray from God, he never stops pursuing us. He never gives up on us, does he?
Never. And that pursuit, you know, that relentless love, that's ultimately what leads to transformation. It's what breaks down those walls that we've built, those thorns that we've grown around our hearts. It opens us up to this possibility of being made new,
yeah.
of being called his people once again.
Yes, that's pretty powerful. It's interesting how the wilderness, you know, often seen as this place of punishment and hardship, it becomes this place of encounter, a place where God can speak tenderly to his people and draw them back to himself.
It is, you know, think about it. It's this place that's stripped bare of distractions. And those illusions that we have of self-sufficiency, they're shattered.
Mm.
And we're forced to confront, like, our need for God.
Yeah.
It's where we can hear his voice more clearly, feel his presence more intensely, the wilderness. You know, it strips away all pretense and leaves us raw and exposed before our Creator.
It makes me think about, you know, those tough times in our own lives.
Yeah.
Those times of hardship, of loss. Mm. And maybe those times are really the very opportunities that we need to encounter God in a deeper way.
You're exactly right. When we're stripped of our comforts, our crutches, you know, our illusions of control, we're actually more open to God's grace, more receptive to his love. It's in those moments of vulnerability that we often experience those most profound transformations.
Hmm. And that theme of wilderness and restoration. I mean, it has echoes throughout the Bible, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, the Israelites wandering in the desert for 40 years, it was a time of testing, a time of refinement, but it was also a time when God provided for them,
yeah.
Guided them, and ultimately brought them to the promised land.
Absolutely. Or think about, you know, Jesus being led into the wilderness to be tempted by Satan.
Right.
But he emerged from that experience stronger, more focused on his mission. The wilderness, you know, for all its harshness, it can be a crucible where faith is forged and character is refined.
Yeah, so it's not just about punishment.
Right.
It's a place of preparation, a place where God refines us, shapes us, prepares us for something greater,
mm-hmm.
a place where we can encounter him in the more intimate and transformative way. I like that.
And, you know, remember, this transformation, this return to God, it's not just an individual journey, right? It's something that God desires for us, for all humanity. It's the ultimate goal of his redemptive plan, to bring all things back to himself, to reconcile the world to himself. What a vision that is. It's a beautiful vision, and it's a hopeful vision. And it makes me wonder, you know, what does it look like for us to participate in this restoration? Mm. How can we be part of God's plan to bring his people back to himself? What do you think?
That's a great question. And it's one that I think we'll explore further, you know, as we continue this deep dive into Hosea. But for now, let's pause here and just let those questions kind of simmer a little bit.
So we've been through a lot, haven't we? I mean, this whole Hosea and Gomer thing, it's a real roller coaster of emotions.
It is, yeah.
But I'm ready to see how it all comes together. Like, what does true repentance, what does it even look like for Israel? And how does God respond?
Well, in chapter 14, we see both a call to repentance and then also a promise of God's healing grace. It's it's like the climax of the story where both Israel and God kind of bare their hearts.
Right.
And there's that line in chapter 14, and it always gets me. It says, "Take with you words and return to the Lord. Say to him, take away all iniquity, accept what is good, and we will pay with bulls the offering of our lips." It's like they're finally realizing how empty their idolatry is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reaching out to God with real remorse.
Yeah, and it's striking, you know, their understanding of what true repentance actually means. It's not just about, you know, saying the right words,
yeah,
or going through the motions. It's this heartfelt acknowledgement of their sin.
Yeah.
You know, a willingness to really turn away from those idols and commit to living in a right relationship with God.
So it's about more than just talk. It's got to be a change of heart, like a real shift in their priorities and allegiances.
You got it. It's about aligning their will with God's will, choosing to love and obey him above all else. And it's that kind of wholehearted repentance that really paves the way for God's incredible response.
Okay, so how does God respond to their plea for forgiveness?
Hosea 14:4 is like this powerful declaration of God's healing and restorative power. He says, "I will heal their apostasy. I will love them freely, for my anger has turned away from them."
Wow. I mean, God's anger, it's not just calmed, it's completely gone.
Right.
It's like a switch is flipped and he's no longer holding their sin against them.
It really is this beautiful picture of reconciliation. It reminds me of that parable in the New Testament about the father welcoming home his prodigal son.
Mm.
You know, there's no scolding, no rehashing of past mistakes, just pure joy, unadulterated joy at their return.
And that idea of God's anger turning away, that's so important, I think, because it highlights that his desire is always for reconciliation, not punishment.
Absolutely. Reconciliation isn't just about wiping the slate clean.
Yeah.
It's about restoring what was broken. It's about making things new. And God doesn't just forgive Israel. He promises to heal them, to bind up their wounds, and to make them flourish again.
So it's like the wilderness experience has served its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They've been stripped bare. They've been confronted with the consequences of their choices. And now they're ready to be replanted, to blossom again under God's loving care.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And that image of blossoming and flourishing, that's really central to Hosea's message of hope. Look at verse 5. It says, "I will be like the dew to Israel. He shall blossom like the lily. He shall take root like the trees of Lebanon." It's this picture of complete restoration of a people revitalized and thriving under God's blessing.
Wow. So even though they've been through the fire, so to speak, there's this incredible promise of new life. New growth,
yeah.
A future that's even brighter than their past.
Exactly. And this future, you know, it isn't just for Israel. It's really a picture of what God desires for all people, for all creation. It's this vision of a world that is reconciled to God, where his love flows freely and his blessings abound.
It's a reminder that no matter how far we've strayed, no matter how much we've messed up, God's love is always there, beckoning us back to himself, offering us the chance to start again, to be made new.
And that's the beauty of Hosea's message. It's the story about the transformative power of love, the relentless pursuit of a God who refuses to give up on his people. It's a story that continues to resonate with us today, reminding us that no matter where we find ourselves, no matter what we've done, there's always hope for redemption, always a chance to return to the one who loves us most.
Wow. What a journey, Hosea. It's a roller coaster of emotions, but it leaves us with this incredible sense of hope, of possibility.
It really does. And I think it challenges us to consider our own relationship with God. You know, are we living in a way that reflects his love and his faithfulness? Are we willing to turn away from our idols and embrace his grace?
Those are some big questions. And those are questions that we can continue to think about, you know, long after this deep dive.
Yeah.
But for those listening, we really encourage you to spend some time with the Book of Hosea yourself. Let its message of love, betrayal, and redemption, you know, just wash over you. And let it challenge you to deepen your walk with God.
Yeah, it's a story that'll stay with you. It'll prompt you to examine your own heart, to seek forgiveness and embrace that transformative power of God's love.
That's a wrap on our deep dive into Hosea. We hope that you've gained some new insights and perspectives on this timeless story. Join us next time as we continue to explore the scriptures and uncover the hidden gems of wisdom and inspiration that they hold. Until then, keep seeking, keep exploring, and keep diving deep into the heart of God.